WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, January 10th, 2017. And I know many of you out there in the sports world, lovers of college football, are still recovering and still trying to catch up on sleep after what took place in last night's national championship game between Alabama and Clemson. It was one rematch for the books. My goodness, so good that, you know what, I may even go back on my DVR and watch that entire fourth quarter again. A heck of a game, back and forth, a battle. Gladiators out there on the football field. In the end, the Tigers, led by Deshaun Watson, pulling out the W, upsetting the acclaimed Alabama Crimson Tide, led by, of course, Nick Saban. Nick Saban had a chance to tie Bear Bryant for the most national championships in the poll era at 6. Well, Nick is going to have to wait a little bit for that. So we'll talk about the incredible night that was Tampa Bay, Florida. What a game it was. We will also invite to the show Mike Nickel, director of At All Cost, a sports documentary set in the world of AAU basketball that is streaming right now on Netflix. I got a chance to pop a squat and check out that documentary, and very eye-opening, to say the least. So you don't want to miss that. Mike Nickel will join us later on, and we will give you guys a preview of tonight's Michigan State women's basketball game, as a certain player by the name of Tori Jankowska has an opportunity to make history and become the program's all-time leading scorer, just needing 7 points to break Ariel Powers' record. How about that? So we'll preview Michigan State, Ohio State, and we will also be giving away a pair of tickets to that game right here on our airwaves. Find out how you can win by keeping it locked right here. But hey, that and more. You know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. In what proved to be one of the most thrilling college football national championship games ever, Clemson stunned the sports world by defeating the powerhouse that is Alabama last night, 35-31, the final. Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson threw a 2-yard touchdown pass to receiver Hunter Renfrow for the go-ahead score with 1 second left on the clock. That would eventually give the Tigers the win. Watson, he was great last night. Beaten up, though, it wasn't easy. He passed for over 400 yards, 420 to be exact, and 3 touchdowns. The Tigers had snapped Alabama's 26-game win streak and beat a number one team for the first time ever. Alabama was 4-0 in the national championship games under Nick Saban. It was 106-6. That was what his record revealed in games in which Alabama led at the half, and 96-0 when entering the fourth quarter with a double-digit lead, as the Tide did on Monday night. We'll make that now 96-1 as Clemson overcame those historic odds. Much more on that game in just a bit. I know many of you who stayed up late to watch that magic unfold have a comment or two on it. If you want to be a part of our airwaves and want to share your thoughts on the Natty Ship, call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet us, Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR_sports. Plenty of national championship talk on today's show. A big congratulations to 27-year head coach
of the Lansing Community College men's basketball team, Mr. Mike Ingram. He is headed to the Hall of Fame. He is one of seven people who will be inducted into the 2017 Hall of Fame by the National Junior College Athletic Association. Ingram has amassed a 565-224 record in his nearly three decades at LCC and has led the Stars to 19 conference championships, including a national title as an assistant coach in 1988. Ingram, who is a native of Jackson, Michigan, has been named Region Coach of the Year three times and Western Conference Coach of the Year 19 times. He has also coached eight NJCAA All-Americans during his time right here in Lansing. Big congrats to Mike. Got to get him on the show to talk about that honor. All right, yesterday, Tom Izzo, head coach of the MSU men's basketball team, he announced that UNLV transfer Ben Carter is officially kaput for the season due to that preseason knee injury. That was expected, right? Now, he's going to shoot for a sixth year of eligibility, and the NCAA requires a special waiver to do that. Those exceptions usually stem from multiple seasons lost to injury. In Carter's case, one of his seasons were missed because, yes, he did choose to sit out as a transfer. Izzo also said on Monday that the chances of senior forward Gavin Schilling returning this season are, quote, looking slimmer, end quote. Since suffering a non-contact injury to his right knee in mid-October and undergoing knee surgery, Schilling has missed the Spartans' entire 2016-17 year. The 6'9", 240-pounder would-be starting center has watched every game in a sweatsuit on the sideline. So we'll know more about the future conditions concerning Gavin Schilling by next week. The University of Michigan men's basketball walk-on, Andrew Dockich, has received a scholarship for the winter semester. In his first three seasons with the Wolverines, Dockich has appeared in 49 games off the bench. He was really scared into the news. I don't know if you guys saw this video via social media, but it was absolutely golden. A security guard walks into the room with the team and calls out Dockich and addresses his conduct on campus. And all of a sudden, Dockich is sitting there sweating. He doesn't know what is going on. It was all a joke as the security guard eventually breaks the news that Dockich would receive the scholarship at the university's compliance office. It's great because Dockich had no idea it was coming. The team erupts in cheer. John Beilein was there. It was great stuff, all right? Hard work pays off, good people. Congratulations to Andrew. The Detroit Tigers continue to add minor league players to its roster. The latest are a trio, of corner infielders that, according to the AAA International League Transactions Wire, have been assigned to AAA Toledo and a veteran minor league pitcher. In the past week, the Tigers have signed right-hander Thad Weber, first baseman Efren Navarro, and Sean Halton, and third baseman Gabriel Quintana. The Navarro signing was first reported by Comcast Sports Mid-Atlantic's Rich Dubroff. The Detroit Pistons will look to make it three straight wins tonight when they play the Sacramento Kings on the road for a late 10:30 p.m. tip. They are coming off a double OT thriller against the Portland Trail Blazers on Sunday. Reggie Jackson, who missed the season's first 21 games, has averaged 24 points and 7 assists over his past 5 games. The struggles seem particularly heavy for forward DeMarcus Cousins for the Kings. The team's leading scorer at 28.1 points per game has contributed only 55 points over the past 3 games while shooting just 38%. That's 17 of 45 from the floor. So we'll see how that one pans out tonight. And other than the national championship, a lot of people were talking about this story last night. New York Knicks star Derrick Rose went AWOL 40 minutes before the start of Monday's game against the New Orleans Pelicans. Shout out to Isaac. Due to a family issue back home in Chicago, sources has said. I'm sure, Isaac, you were, you feel for Rose, but you weren't complaining that Derrick Rose wasn't playing last night,
not
right?
Not at all, no.
The star, get this, again, he's a $23 million point guard. He sparked panic when his mysterious disappearance left teammates praying, and the Knicks even sent someone to check on him at his apartment. Rose, who had been at the shoot-around that morning, eventually let friends know he was okay in text with Coach Jeff Hornacek, saying, quote, everything will become clear later on, in quote. So the good news here is this, that Derrick Rose is fine, because I must admit, I was a bit worried when I found out that no one knew where Rose was. And last but not least, the Detroit Red Wings, losers of three of the last four, will try to get back on track tonight as they head to the Shy. Speaking of the Bulls, right? To Chicago, though, to play the Chicago Blackhawks. Puck drop scheduled for 8:30 p.m. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. So much to get to, so little time. Let's start the show.
Out of bounds. If the ball's in his left hand, he might be able to reach for the pylon, but with the ball in his right arm, he's out of bounds.
Hurts backward pass to Stewart. He could throw it. Looks downfield for Howard, who makes a catch at the Clemson 30. A trick play dialed up by Sark. Hurts now took a peek downfield and now just barrels forward, still running in the clear and scores. Bring pressure, but it's picked up. And Williams down the sideline makes another big catch. He beat Averett. A sack could take them out of field goal range. Bama brings some heat. Watson delivers. Catch made down inside the 10. Watson. Touchdown! Hugel just boots it along the ground. They fall on it. Clemson Tigers, new kings of college football. Official. Punctuation. Clemson dethrones and avenges Alabama.
And that is how we start this afternoon's current sports. There was really no other way to begin the show, right? My goodness, I am still wiping the crust out my eyes after not getting much sleep last night, staying up really, really late. And, you know, I usually stay up late. And Isaac, you and I have had this conversation. I mean, we're both night owls, but, you know, it's like I knew that game was going to take place at 8 p.m., I knew it was going to finish around midnight, but, you know, I've worked a long day yesterday. I started getting tired around the second half, and I'm sitting there saying to myself, I need some coffee. So that was my mistake. I drank coffee around, had to be like 10:15, 10:30, something like that in that time frame. And as soon as the game went off, I mean, I'm jacked because it's just that type of a game, right? I probably didn't hit the bed until probably 3:30. I still felt the caffeine brewing in my system. I mean, what a game, though. I mean, that is how you end the college football season. That's how it's done. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat watching that game back and forth. Alabama, you know, especially when Alabama got out to that 14-0 lead, I'm sitting there saying to myself, okay, well, my prediction just went out the window. And it looked like for a moment, just for a brief moment, that Alabama was going to stretch that thing out and it was going to be an uphill climb for the Clemson Tigers. I didn't want to see a blowout. I mean, we have seen enough blowouts when it comes to the college football playoff semifinals. I mean, those were snoozers on New Year's Eve. So I was hoping for a good game, and that's exactly what we got in that second half. The Clemson Tigers, the new kings of the college football world. What's so funny, I mean, you know, in this thing called sports talk, we love to throw around predictions and love to analyze what's going to happen, give us a score, blah, 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 right? So to close out yesterday's show, I actually predicted a 31-27 win. So I predicted a 4-point win for the Clemson Tigers. And Isaac laughed at me, like many folks, when I said that. And I predicted that for a few reasons. And I think one of the big reasons I did was because of, now granted, Alabama's defense, I mean, that's one of the best defenses in college football history. Especially when you look at the statistics. I mean, that front line, that defensive line, that front seven for the Crimson Tide is from Pluto. I mean, they're not human. It's remarkable how many times they were able to get in the face of Deshaun Watson and in many regards, bully the offensive line of the Clemson Tigers. Unbelievable. I mean, those are some big horses on that defensive line. But you know what? That secondary had not faced a receiver tight end tandem like that of Clemson. And we saw how that panned out. The first name I want to throw out that I have to give mad props to might have been my MVP of the game, along with another guy who I'll get to in just a second, but Mike Williams. Hats off to you, man. Mike Williams has been one of the most dynamic wide receivers in college football this entire year. So good. I mean, he's a former basketball player, so, you know, he's got mad hops. He's got great hands. He runs these fantastic routes, and he's just tough. And you saw all of those things on display last night. You really did. So fun to watch. And what really got me was, you know, at the very beginning of that game, we saw Mike Williams take a hit, a really, really hard hit, too, from Tony Brown of Alabama. A hit that I thought should have been targeting. It looked like, let's call it like it is. It was a helmet-to-helmet hit. Tony led with his head, and you immediately saw Mike Williams go to the ground, and he was a bit shaken up. And I wasn't sure whether or not he would return to the game because that could have been a concussion. And I'm pretty sure they went through concussion protocol on that Clemson sideline. And, you know, he was defenseless as well. I mean, his legs were wrapped up, and then all of a sudden, Tony Brown comes out of nowhere and just lowers the boom. I don't know how the officials missed that. I mean, that was a crime. Tony Brown tried to, that was criminal. He tried to take him out. Mike Williams goes to the sidelines. He recoups, gets his head back in the game, and he just, time and time again, made big catches, made big plays, 8 of them to be exact. Mike Williams, 8 catches for 94 yards and a touchdown. That's how you get the job done. Another guy that you have to mention in this whole thing is a guy who's not that intimidating when you look at him physically. 5'11", 180. But number 13, Hunter Renfrow, so good last night. Hunter, just efficient. He's a joy to watch. Hunter Renfrow actually had 10 receptions for 92 yards, 2 touchdowns. Alabama did not have an answer for Hunter. And, you know, it was so fun watching Hunter because, I mean, he's just going up and down the field, catching these small dump-offs and just taking it to him. First down after first down after first down. And then the tight end, Jordan Leggett. Those three are a trio that Alabama had not played all year. And that secondary has not really been tested with talent like that. Leggett, Williams, and Renfrow balled out of control. Also, what hurt Alabama, and you know, you have to bring up this. losing Bo Scarborough, that was big. Let's just keep it real. Bo Scarborough, I mean, he was the reason Alabama got out to that quick lead. I mean, how about that first touchdown he had where he just bowls through defenders, going to the left side, drags about two to the end zone, tackle and seven. Jalen Hurts did not have to do much in that first half because the run game, it worked. And Clemson struggled to try and slow it down. The second half, though, was a different story, especially after Bo went out. Now, with that being said, I must say that Damian Harris did come in the game and he didn't. It's not like there was a tremendous fall off when it comes to the run game for the Alabama Crimson Tide once Bo Scarborough went out. I mean, Damian Harris came in and picked up a few first downs. As soon as he gets in, I mean, he's a talented sophomore, and I think he's going to be great moving forward for Nick Saban's team. But when you miss a Bo Scarborough, who, I mean, he looked like a robot out there at times. I mean, just shedding defenders left and right, that is going to hurt you. So what happens? It puts more pressure on the arm of the true freshman quarterback in Jalen Hurts on the game's biggest stage. And Jalen wasn't lights out at first. He really wasn't. And the same thing can be said for Deshaun Watson for Clemson. I mean, Deshaun Watson seemed to start that game a little off. You know, and I think maybe he was thinking too much. You know, especially when you're going against that front seven that the Crimson Tide has. That can be a bit intimidating. So, I mean, he just started second-guessing himself a little bit too much. Eventually, I think he just put it in the back of his head and said, you know what, this is the national championship game. I am a senior. What do I have to lose? I'm just going to go out here and play my game. He started to play more loose as the game went on. But for Jalen Hurts, that was the key. Put it on that young pup's arm. Because if you continue to let Alabama burn you on the ground, you're going to lose. And Dabo Swinney knew that. I think they went into the halftime, made a few adjustments, and you saw a different game in the second half. Jalen Hurts, let's just read the stats off really briefly here. Jalen Hurts, 13 of 31 for 131 yards, one touchdown. That's a QBR of 25.2. Deshaun Watson, 36 of 56, 420 yards, three touchdowns. Both quarterbacks did not throw a pick in the game. That was big as well for both. Deshaun Watson ended up with a 67 QBR. When everything was against Clemson, when Jalen Hurts walked in, skipped in for that touchdown, and Alabama took the lead with just minutes to play in that football game, you just saw something in the eyes of Deshaun Watson. And they go down the field on that drive. And it was so impressive. You have Mike Williams with the big catch on the left sidelines. You have Leggett stretching out for that big first down conversion that puts them in Alabama territory. And then you have Renfrow to cap things off. It's funny, though, because looking at the dialogue via social media like I always do when watching a sporting event, I have like an addiction now. You know, every time a sporting event is on, I'm always tweeting. I'm always on Twitter. Even if I'm not covering that event, I'm always on Twitter seeing what the masses are thinking during the game because it kind of just gives you an insight into popular opinion, which intrigues me from time to time. And it really intrigued me during the national championship game because I wanted to know what folks thought about Nick Saban kind of losing it on the sidelines because there were two touchdowns, one to Mike Williams, and that last one to Hunter Renfrow, in which there were obvious picks that allowed both of those receivers to spring through and score the touchdown. And, you know, I laugh because and even our own Brad Walker here brought this up to me when I walked in today. You know, they asked Deshaun Watson about that last touchdown, and he says, yeah, it was a pick play. Doesn't even try to hide it, right? A total pick, clearly a pick play, and the referees didn't throw the flag. Now, does Nick Saban have a legitimate gripe there? Yeah, I think he does. But hey, as I stated yesterday, I kind of go back to my spiel that I had about, you know, referees affecting the game. Again, good teams find a way to overcome that. They just do. So I saw a few Alabama fans yesterday on social media, Isaac, that were not happy with those two touchdowns. And I think they do have a case. At the same time, Alabama had this game in hand. How about, you know, when Jalen Hurts scores that touchdown and you got the lead there, the defense has to step up. That secondary can't allow Mike Williams and Leggett to have the catches that they had. Grasping at straws, if you ask me. Nonetheless, Nick Saban had a chance to tie Bear Bryant for 6 national titles and make history, to tie the most national titles from a coach in the modern poll era. Nick Saban is going to have to wait now. And it's so funny because, you know, looking at the early season projections, the way too early projections of next year, Alabama is already the favorite, you know? So this is going to be – this is interesting because we've seen back-to-back years where Clemson and Alabama have met on the gridiron for the entire enchilada, and we've seen 2 historic matchups. 2 games that go down in the history books as 2 of the greatest national championship games we've ever seen. I mean, can we right now already book Bama and Clemson in for a part 3? I mean, this is fun. This is fun, Isaac.
That's something that I actually tweeted out last night. But yeah, I actually had an issue when I went to the ESPN website to start my research for what actually happened, trying to analyze and understand what went on in last night's historic championship game. Because the first article about it was way too early rankings Bama and Florida State at the time. I'm like, y'all know what just happened, right? Y'all know what just happened.
Whatever. Can we let this soak in
exactly.
for a minute, right?
Can we enjoy that game, that moment, all of that? But I think you're absolutely right. I said it going in, and I made the wrong prediction. I was wrong about Clemson all along. I'll happily admit it because I was for them last night. But, and you know, I didn't predict them to win it. I'm saying I was rooting for the team.
Yeah, it's so great. You had to have mixed feelings last night watching that game, Isaac, because you have been you have not bought Clemson.
Hater.
You've not bought Clemson all year. You know what I mean? And to see them compete the way they did in the college football playoff and against Alabama, I mean, my gosh. I mean, you had to have a lot of thoughts going through your head last night.
Well, one thing I did say, though, that I thought was really spot on, and I'll take credit for it because I can't really take credit for much else that I've called this college football season, but I did say that I thought Mike Williams would be the X factor, and I think we can sure as heck say, yes, he was. Not only did he open up the field for other receivers, but the catches that he made by himself on long third downs, on these plays where he actually should have had a pass interference call on a second down as well that the referees missed. So there were plenty of things that he did that individually transformed the game. His presence on fade routes, his size, his sheer ability as a former basketball player to be able to turn around, haul in that, have such a good sense, such a good feel of where the ball placement was. He changed that course that game. The other player, I call him the raging redneck as of last night, Ben Boulware.
I love Ben. Great. Did you see his speech?
Afterwards.
Oh, he just go. You know,
he
it's funny
off.
Because there are a few people that tweeted last night, pulled the plug because it looked like maybe he may have thrown a few expletives. But, you know, he kept it clean. He kept it fiery. He gave a big shout out to a lot of players who have built the Clemson football program in the past. Even a shout out to Sammy Watkins, one of those players. I mean, it was a great speech filled with a ton of emotion. I don't know who the player was. It was breakdancing, though. Did you see that guy?
Did not know who it was. I know who you're talking about.
It was hilarious. I mean, Scott Van Pelt, who took the air right after the broadcast on SportsCenter, they played it about 3 times because it was so good. But a fun moment
it
last
was.
Night.
And Boulware, he made a play that definitely validated all his hype afterwards. That was one of the smartest senior moves that I've ever seen. When he read the screen, called it out, instantly sprinted to the other side to make the tackle. That was a fun game. And the one thing that I can't get out of my head, I haven't said his name yet, Deshaun Watson. Mm-hmm. The Deshaun Watson, Vince Young comparisons.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
10-year anniversary or 11-year anniversary of USC versus Texas. Boy, I mean, there could not have been 2 more similar comparable linear games that those two took the path of. It was amazing seeing Deshaun Watson make that hurdle over the defender to
and
get
Deshaun,
Clemson to the one.
Right.
Wow. And it was shades of Vince Young.
And Deshaun actually acknowledged Vince Young in his post-game speech. You know,
yeah.
I think he said something like, you know, Vince Young was going through my head or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And it was funny because Kirk Herbstreit made the comment comparing the two, which I thought was just so spot on, so acute during the game. And for Deshaun Watson not to have heard that, but just to say, yeah, I looked up to Vince Young as a kid and I was thinking about him. It's amazing the parallels between those two.
It really is. Let's hit our first break, guys. When we come back, we're going to put that performance from Deshaun Watson and that game in perspective. Where does that game and where does that quarterback performance rank in some of the greatest national championship games of all time? We'll answer that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKER's Current Sports.
Senate nomination hearings begin, and Jeff Sessions is a headliner.
These comments that you could say about a commie organization or something, I may have said something like that in a general way and that probably was wrong.
Remarks from more than 30 years ago follow the senator from Alabama in his quest to become attorney general. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
The Takeaway, today at 3 on AM 870 WKAR.
Jamie Paisley brings you classical music every weekday afternoon on 90.5 WKAR. Look for rain today with a high of 42. Rain and snow tonight, the overnight low in the upper 20s. We'll have gusty winds up to 35 miles an hour today and overnight. A chance of rain with a high of 40 on Wednesday.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, if you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know number 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can join us via social media at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet us at Al Martin, WKAR, or at WKAR underscore sports. I want to remind you all that, hey, catch your weekly, or I should say daily dose of the Current Sports 2-Minute Drill. A quick 2-minute update on what's happening here in local sports and beyond. It varies on when I post that during the day because there are events such as, like yesterday, Michigan State men's basketball practice. I had a report from practice yesterday. So, I mean, practice ended around 6 o'clock and I posted it around 7. So, depending on what's taking place that day, you can find it, though, via social media at facebook.com/currentsports. Tonight, I will have a drill centered on the Michigan State women's basketball team as they will host Ohio State in the lone matchup between the Spartans and Buckeyes of the season. A big game. It's always fun anytime the Spartans and the Buckeyes go at it. I think about, you know, that game not too long ago when Ariel Powers and Kelsey Mitchell just went at it on the hardwood. One of my favorite, not just women's basketball games I've ever covered, my favorite basketball games, period, that I've ever covered. It was a back-and-forth battle. And now to put, you know, the career of Ariel Powers in perspective, I mean, now she decided to leave college early, a year early, leaving after her junior year to take her talents to the WNBA. That's been a dream of hers for quite some time. She accomplished that dream and became a first-round pick for the Dallas Wings. Had a great first year. She got injured later on in the season, is still trying to battle back from that. She's going through rehab. Looks as though she's back on track for that. But she left the program. This is how good Ariel Powers was. Without even playing her senior season, she left the program as the program's all-time leading score. Well, there's a player nipping at her heels, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when now. Senior Tori Jankowska has an opportunity. She is 6 points away from tying Ariel Powers, 7 away from breaking that all-time Michigan State women's basketball career scoring record tonight. Tori Jankowska has an opportunity to break that record. I will have a full report from that tonight. So check out the two-minute drill later on this evening. Game is at 8. Yeah, really late tip for this game tonight. Should end around 10-ish. Check by 11, 1130 at the latest. You'll see a report right there on Facebook.com. So you do not want to miss that for sure. And hey, if you want to check out that game tonight, Spartans and Buckeyes, a pretty big one. Our phone lines are open right now. I'm just going to make it easy for you. Caller number one, the first caller who calls into Current Sports right now will win those tickets to check out Michigan State and OSU at the Breslin, 8 p.m. tip, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That's the number to call in. Good luck. All right, we finished our first segment of the show by, of course, recapping the remarkable game that was the national championship in the world of college football out at Tampa Bay. Clemson defeating the Alabama Crimson Tide. Historic game. I mean, a 35-year title drought for the Tigers is now over. The Tigers, national champs for the first time since 1981, a year after Alabama won its fourth title under Nick Saban with a classic 45-40 win in Arizona. Clemson denied the tie, an unprecedented fifth championship in 8 seasons. Still, a lot of college football fans are still trying to process this because of the dominance that is Alabama every single season. So before we hit that break, and we actually had a comment from one of our great listeners, Dave McNeely. He wanted to know, where does that quarterback performance from Deshaun Watson rank in college football lore, national championship lore? And Isaac, you brought up a great comparison, one that Kirk Herbstreit brought up during the broadcast last night. But you couldn't help but think about Vince Young. I mean, I still remember that game like it was yesterday. I mean, the 2006 Rose Bowl, I was what? Man, I had to be, that was my junior year of high school. Or sophomore year of high school, actually. Watching that game, Vince Young's 8-yard touchdown on a fourth down run to give Texas that 39-38 lead. And then Young's 2-point conversion that pushed Texas ahead by 3. I mean, that was a moment that is forever branded in my overall sports fandom memory. My goodness. And you remember how much time was left on the clock after Young's score. Do you remember that, Isaac? You remember how much time was left after Young put that through?
I couldn't tell you an exact number. I could guess.
Because I looked it up last night. Just throw out a guess.
Say 20 seconds.
You're a second off. 19 seconds actually were left after Young score. And, you know, leaving not much time for USC to try to respond, right? And you saw what happened last night. I mean, even better clock management from Clemson last night. I mean, what was it, 4 seconds? And they kicked that onside kick, and Bama doesn't even have a chance for a Hail Mary, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just beautiful football last night to close it out. Young's touchdown, without question, without debate, hands down, one of the greatest plays in college football history. But it did not win the game the moment the ball crossed the goal line. USC had a ton of time left still. 4 seconds, I mean, that's a wing and a prayer right there for Alabama to try and pull off a miracle. 19 seconds still gave USC a chance, at least, to maybe throw off, two, maybe three plays to try things. So last night, Clemson, with just giving Alabama 4 seconds left, ideally shut the door. And then flawless execution on the onside kick. So the USC-Texas game ended on an incomplete pass from Matt Leinart. You know, there wasn't even a field goal attempt or even a Hail Mary to close out that game. Again, the last two plays of Clemson's title victory were a 2-yard touchdown pass and that onside kick. But nonetheless, I mean, Vince Young in that game was so, so good. I do think Deshaun Watson's name deserves to be in this conversation, But you know what? I'm remiss because I can't think back to the nooks and crannies of that Texas and USC game. I don't know how overall, from top to bottom, from the very start of the game to the very end, how Vince Young played. I know he put on a show in that second half, but the thing about Deshaun Watson last night is he wasn't Deshaun Watson to start off that game, if you know what I mean. I mean, Deshaun Watson, as I mentioned, he second-guessed himself. He would see certain holes to try and use his feet to pick up a first down here and there, and then all of a sudden Alabama would just easily collapse on him. There were, you know, some off-target throws here and there. But nonetheless, as that game went on, Deshaun Watson became Deshaun Watson. He put on that Superman cape. I mean, how about the dive that, looking at it in real time, I thought was a touchdown, but he just put on the cape and just took off like Superman to try and punch it through for the touchdown. I mean, Deshaun Watson eventually became Deshaun Watson, but, you know, I can't think back to how Vince Young played the entirety of that game back in 06.
Warren and I had the luxury of just looking that up while you were talking.
Thank
although
you.
I swear
Thank you, my good sir.
That the 20 seconds was just a flat-out guess off the top, but Vince Young in that game had 260 yards
right
through the air, pretty much 30 of 40 in completions, just like Deshaun Watson. They relied heavily on him. Those are a lot of passes to throw for a college quarterback, no matter what game it is. But then he had 19 rushes for 200 yards mm-hmm. and 3 TDs. So on the ground, Young was a little bit more potent than Deshaun Watson was in the championship game. But overall, Deshaun Watson finished with more yards aggregate than Vince Young did. So it's up to you. Deshaun had a lot more in the air, but that is a great debate to be had. And to be honest, I'm not sure if we should have it. And mm-hmm. the reason is,
why is that?
These are two great performances in their own light. They're indistinctly similar. Mm-hmm. They are almost like an anniversary performance. And in some ways, we should just appreciate them for what they are. And I know that sounds all corny and sappy, but the thing is, Deshaun Watson, a little bit better through the air. Vince Young, a little bit better on the ground that game. But the thing is, they had the same result. Both scored, not giving the opponent any time pretty much to answer. Right in the dying minute, both had arguably the 1 and 2 best championship performances of all time, at least in the modern era. And you know what? I'm not even going to try to sort through the two. Maybe that's a cop-out, but Deshaun Watson and Vince Young, I'm going to say they're on the same plateau, the same level.
I like that answer, Isaac, because far too often in the sports world we live in, we love to compare and contrast, and was this performance greater than this performance? It's ideally what we do in today's modern world of sports talk, especially on sports talk radio. I mean, hey, it's fun to do it, right? But, you know, rarely do we hear an answer like that where you just got to just appreciate the greatness of both performances. You know, Deshaun Watson, I may like Deshaun's more because I just like the story more when it comes to Deshaun, just because, I mean, this is a kid who really struggled in that first half and, you know, just struggling to try and find the offense. I mean, they battled back from 14 down against Alabama. They usually don't lose in those circumstances. You know what I mean? So when watching that performance, I mean, Deshaun, he just had a mindset of resiliency that led them to victory. Now, this is another debate to put up, and this is what a lot of people are talking about today as well. Where does this game rank in some of the best national championship games ever? Now, last night's was incredible. Again, 4-point win for Clemson. Nobody really giving Clemson a shot in this game other than crazy folks like me, right? But at the same time, when you compare this game and the way it ended in the drama, I mean, it was so fun to watch, right? I mean, what other games can you compare this to? Where there are a plethora. You know, a few games that come to mind, which I do believe this game was better than still, but Ohio State, the 2003 Fiesta Bowl win to claim the title over Miami, that game had an incredible finish, Isaac. Went to overtime, a 17-17 score, tremendous overtime, though can't overcome lackluster moments of the first four quarters. And that's what that game was. It was kind of ho-hum up until overtime began, and then it was on like Donkey Kong. Yeah, but so that's a game that I put in that category. Another one, which I will also take last night's national championship game over, though, but is in the conversation, the 1984 Orange Bowl. My pops would always bring up this one. Yeah, a de facto title game, Miami beating Nebraska 31-30, pass breakup, on the Huskers' game-winning two-point conversion try with less than a minute to go. All-time great game, but doesn't stack up quite like what we saw last night. So those are a few games you can throw in. You can even throw in the 06 Texas and USC game as well. I mean, that's always going to be one you bring up in the conversation. And then even last year's Alabama and Clemson game. That was also a fun one.
Last year's was great. You can go back to 2011.
Yeah.
Go to Oregon versus Auburn. You remember Michael Dwyer's run when he was supposedly down. He rolled over the Oregon defender, never letting actually an appendage of his body touch the ground, went on to trample another 50 yards downfield. That was outstanding. Oregon ended up losing that game by 3 points. Specifically, you can point to that run, and I'm a little bit partial, but that Auburn team had an amazing story as well.
Cam Newton
leading a 28-point comeback against Alabama in the fourth quarter. Nick Saban also. The thing is, I like these sorts of games where it's Nick Saban involved in the storyline, because whether or not you think that this made him the greatest coach ever, just making the championship, or whether you think he has got a little ways to go, I personally do think he's the best coach ever. But the thing is, this was the first time in some 60-odd games or whatever that he was leading by that margin heading into the fourth quarter and then lost. Clemson made history last night, not just in title games. They made history against an all-time team and an all-time coach.
And it was fun to watch. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You know, I spent not much time last night, Isaac. I just wanted to see the plethora of channels that ESPN had flowing last night to cover that game. I went to ESPN2, and that was interesting, but it was kind of a headache because I'm trying to watch the game. Then you have four guys in total, two guys on the Alabama sidelines, one play-by-play guy on the Alabama sidelines, one play-by-play guy on the Clemson sidelines, along with a former Alabama and former Clemson player giving analysis. And it's kind of like dual coverage, you know, going on. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't watch that. And I turned the channel to ESPN News. Now, ESPN News, I must say, was pretty cool, though, because there was no sports anchor in the house. There was no host in the house. It was just a plethora of college football coaches shooting the breeze, watching the game, and giving you their take and their analysis on what is taking place. It was just like guys in the basement of the man cave just talking about it, but some of the most acclaimed minds in college football. That was pretty cool because for those X's and O's junkies in the world of sports, that was right up your alley. But for the most part, probably about 95% of the time, I just kept my TV on ESPN and watch, you know, Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit do what they do. And I thought they did a good job last night.
They did a great job. And the plight of college living for me is I've got an antiquated TV that doesn't even work. So I actually had to stream it via my computer, hook it up with an HDMI cord, and be about, 20 seconds lagging behind all of my roommates.
Tough times for Isaac Constance, man. The world we live in, dude. I must say, though, I have to ask this question. Is it a little bit too much? Talk about all these streams. ESPN 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I think it totally is. And March Madness last year also introduced for the Final Four the two different commentary voices for partial announcing.
Now, I like that.
Really?
I did not have a problem with that. I think that if you're watching that game and if you're a diehard fan of a Villanova, right, and you want to hear your broadcast on a national stage, I mean, you've gotten there. So, hey, I thought that was kind of cool. Some fans enjoyed that because they got to hear a different take, a homer take for sure, but a different take from your usual national basketball scene coverage on that type of a stage. So I thought that was cool. I mean, that's three streams? ESPN had like seven streams going last night. I saw Bill Walton a part of the coverage. Rachel Nichols, you know, these are guys that cover basketball. They were a part of the coverage. And by the way, Bill Walton, I don't know if you saw Bill Walton. He had like on this like Uncle Sam USA attire going on. I didn't know what was going on that stream, but that's going a little bit too far.
Yeah, that definitely is. I didn't even know about all the different mechanisms that ESPN was pulling out, but I'll say one thing. shout out to the pylon cam last night. It had a great angle of the Deshaun Watson dive for the touchdown, the sprawling hurdle he had of the Alabama defender. And man, the pylon cam, it is cool. It came in handy.
It did. It really did. There were some great angles. I mean, that's a long overdue invention, if you ask me. Isaac, let's hit our second break. When we come back, I guess we got big timed a little bit. Mike Nickel, who is the director of At All Costs. We hope to get him on tomorrow's show. But I wanted to dive into the world of AAU basketball and whether or not it's hurting or helping today's game. So I want to just introduce that conversation right after this break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The world's major car manufacturers share a goal with major tech companies.
Every single automotive maker wants just self-driving cars is their number one priority, no matter who you are in the auto industry.
But they don't all agree on the route. I'm Steve Inskeep, a driverless future, tomorrow on Morning Edition.
Morning Edition, tomorrow morning between 5 and 9 on 90.5 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We have less than 10 minutes left here on our airwaves. 517-355-WKAR. Isaac, did we give away the MSU Women's basketball tickets?
No ticket callers just yet. Still,
you know what?
Got the phone lines open, waiting for some callers to call in.
You know what? That kind of gets under my skin a little bit. Just a little bit. Because, you know, we haven't given away one pair of tickets to check out the MSU women's basketball team. You know what immediately goes through my mind when our phones are blowing up when the MSU men play, right? But what immediately goes through my head is the lack of popularity when it comes to women's basketball. And I used to be one of those individuals that thought that there was no intrigue or any appeal when watching women play the game on the hardwood. Now, granted, sure, there's a lack of athleticism when it comes to the game. There's a lot of things that the women's game does not have when comparing it to the men's game. But these women can ball. I mean, when I started covering the MSU women's basketball team, I found a new respect for what they do. It's just the way it is, though. I mean, I guess it is what it is, man. Tori Jankowska, though, is going to put on a show tonight. I guarantee it.
Well, I'll say two things about it. For one, this is still a little bit of MSU football hangover. I'm 100% serious. This fan base is not enthused. They're not energized.
That's true. That is true.
Not anything.
I
Even
agree.
Some of the basketball games, they have not, men's basketball games, they have not been getting as into it. We did not give away tickets. Free tickets. Just call in. Free tickets.
Right.
To one men's basketball game. Usually the Breslin is popping. It's hard to even get a ticket from any sort of scammer outside the gate.
Right.
Oh, come on. So the other thing, though, you're exactly right about women's basketball. I don't have a sister. I never grew up about it. I had the same misconception. Ever since covering it, put it this way. The problem with women's basketball, or the perceived problem, which is the lack of athleticism or flashy plays or whatever it might be, is the solution to men's basketball.
Right, that, right.
The problem with men's basketball right now is everybody watches the pros. The thing is, you're not Steph Curry. You're not Kobe Bryant. You're not LeBron James. You cannot do that. Work on the layup. Work on diving for the ball first. And that's what women's basketball has. It's a beautiful thing to see. And the strategy is so fine-tuned. It's great.
You've got to change the lens. Simple as that. Change the lens on which the way you're viewing and comparing these two sports. And you know, it's funny, though. I think that because when you were gone, Isaac, we gave away throughout the entire holiday break, we gave away every single MSU men's basketball ticket. That took place, every game that took place over the break. I mean, phone lines were going nuts because I think that it also depends on the competition as well. They were starting Big Ten play during the holiday break, so people wanted to see those games. So I think MSU fans are getting a little bit spoiled, if you ask me. I don't know. This is a conversation I have been waiting to have on this show since I sat on my sofa this past weekend and watched a documentary by the name of At All Costs. I mean, I just happened to be, I was, you know, just got done working out at the gym. I came back with the pup. I'm trying to watch something to fall asleep on. Let me watch a sports doc. I love sports documentaries. I saw this on Netflix. I watch it, and there are so many emotions that came to mind while watching it because I knew about the AAU system. I mean, heck, I played AAU basketball when I was in high school. Played for the Detroit Hurricanes on Detroit's west side between Joy Road and West Chicago. Same AAU team that actually Jason Richardson balled out for. A lot of history for the Hurricanes. And, I know about the AAU system, but I had no idea how it's changed over the years. Isaac, can we just to close the show, just play the trailer of this? Because we hope to have a conversation with Mike Nichol, the director of this documentary, which was very eye-opening to myself and anyone who's checked it out. Check it out.
I always threaten him with the beast, that the beast has been out there since 5 this morning. He's been shooting and stretching and running and practicing his deep. And if he's out there, you ain't making the team. I wanted to know from day one whether my kid could hang or not. Only place we could find that was AAU.
It's part of the process now to making it in basketball.
You spend all summer and watch AAU basketball, you'll see the next generation of NBA stars.
All the money they're putting into it, now you have an even bigger target on your back.
The kid is the product, so if you got the product, people will come.
You don't know who the next LeBron's gonna be. You don't know who the next Derrick Rose is gonna be. You're just hoping that the people in your brand are gonna find that guy.
The moment you let up, you're gonna get your throat cut. Bust their ass. Do not wait.
One, two, three, man. Again, the name of that documentary, At All Costs, the doc set in the world of AAU basketball that explores how the AAU system has professionalized youth grassroots basketball here in America. The doc follows highly recruited blue-chip prospects, their families, and their teams as they navigate the shaky terrain of the AAU circuit in pursuit of their dreams. And I mentioned this to you yesterday, Isaac, when we were sitting there at MSU men's basketball practice watching Izzo flip a wig, right? And I mentioned how there are a lot of familiar faces in this documentary, one of those faces being Parker Jackson Cartwright, 5-star point guard from L.A. He burst on the national scene in 2010 when UCLA offered him a full scholarship at just 14 years old. The documentary actually follows Parker and his father, Raymond, and you heard him in that documentary. You heard his voice a time or two in there as they both navigate the various stages of his recruitment. And the schedule that this young man had was mind-blowing, Isaac. I'll go into further details about this doc on tomorrow's Current Sports, but it was so eye-opening. And and Izzo actually made an appearance in the documentary. I mean, for like probably 3 seconds, Tom Izzo was sitting on the sidelines on his recruiting trail in the doc. So, and if Parker Jackson Cartwright, if that name rings a bell, Parker Jackson Cartwright now is the starting point guard for the Arizona Wildcats, who, of course, played Michigan State and handled the Spartans a loss earlier this year. Parker Jackson Cartwright actually had a technical foul in that game. So a lot of connections in this documentary. We'll talk more about it on tomorrow's Current Sports. We will have a full report from tonight's MSU women's basketball game. Tori Jankowska going for the all-time program scoring record, just 6 away from tying Ariel Powers. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. Take care and be easy, people.
As president.